Well, hey, Gundam Maniacs, welcome to the Gundam Explained show live, if you're here live. I keep forgetting, I call this a live show, but sometimes it's not, because you could be listening to this in the future. Why do I have to make time travel jokes all the time?
I mean, if you were listening to it in the past, that would be a little weird, right?
I would want to know how that happened. That would be interesting. I mean, it could happen. We have Santo Bell, one of our members here, longtime members, that is in Australia. And so, like, in the Discord, he was like, hey, Merry Christmas from the future. Well, I added the time travel thing. I don't know. I love it. But speaking of Christmas, we had Christmas yesterday, so we talked about it. Steven, how are you doing? I know you streamed on Christmas Eve, and you were actually playing. This was a good idea. You were playing from SD Generation Genesis, the 0080 levels, right?
Man, it could. Well, because I don't have cross rays. Otherwise, I would have done like Endless Waltz, right?
But good. I didn't think about that because I have cross rays. I just never play it.
Well, so I thought it was funny because it was like you, Ultronimus, and I all did gaming streams on Christmas Eve. We didn't want to do anything on Christmas, you know, obviously let people spend time with their families, do their thing. But having an opportunity to do one last live show before the end of the year. And, you know, maybe we'll do some more streams like before then, but not like the official live show.
Not the official. Yeah.
That was cool.
Yeah. And I think if I remember correctly, so SDG Generation Genesis is a huge game.
Like massive.
Because I have to look up the time. I wonder if I can do that live while we're, because I have that Exophase website I always use.
But oh, yeah.
Like I played it so much. And then I remember, what was it? Like I'm finally at Zeta. Oh my God, 69 hours. Nice. But yeah, that's how long I've played it. And I'm at the Zeta part. Like the
wow.
I finally got to the finally. I don't know. How long does that stuff take? There's so much 1 year war stuff, you know.
There's a ton. Yeah. I mean, and see, I had the benefit of playing on the PS Vita, and so like, you know, it was like my wife would be asleep in bed and I'm just kind of under the comforter, like
That's such a good reason to get a Vita, because I feel like I'd probably play it more. Because sometimes I'll be in a situation where it's like, oh, let's see if I have a phone game to play. Because and most phone games I can't get into, because what the game ends up being is managing your currency, getting your clicking the thing every day. In fact, there's this cool Godzilla game called Battle Line that I was like, oh, I'm into Godzilla now. I'll do the game thing. That's how my brain works. And it just does that. I log in. Then it's like, okay, check my refreshes here. Check my refreshes there. And then after a while, I'm like, you know what? I'm done with these.
I do this with my real world bank account, like log in, check my balance. Okay.
But you know what? Xionic Shadow said he played it all. That is quite the achievement. Which is awesome.
And it's a tough game to 100% because, you know, there's a couple of like late stage mobile suits that you can pick up, and then you can just go back and just mop the floor with 1 year war stuff. Like,
yeah, I got the DLC, Advance of Zeta stuff.
Oh yeah.
And I've just been upgrading those, and I've been using, so it's like nothing is canon. Like, but I do like how some of the levels, or most of them actually, all have that like bonus scenario to do. Like if you can, and I remember there's some where this is where Rob with Flail Throughs comes in. He has all this stuff documented in his YouTube videos where I'm like, okay, how do I do this in two moves? And which reminds me, because I'm also playing that Godzilla Voxel Wars, and it actually plays just like that. And I've wrapped my head around it more, but you're Godzilla and it's on a grid, whatever. But you want to... What you want in the maps, there are buildings infested with mushrooms. And as Godzilla, you want to attack them because that gives you G energy to then ask Kaiju to help you. So what the game mainly is using Godzilla to destroy these mushrooms to get energy to then use the Kaiju to destroy the Kaiju. And so
interesting.
A lot of times it's the challenge is like beat this in two moves without any hits. And it's like, how? But it's that deep with the mechanics where it's like, oh, you can figure out how to do it. And then they even have it where people can make their own levels. So then I went in and downloaded someone's level to try, and it was so hard. But what's interesting is every time you make a move, there's a back button I don't know if it's like that in G Generation where you can just undo.
Yeah,
you can undo all the way back.
Yeah, you can. You can like if you're moving a single unit in G Gen, you can like map it out and then decide to go back and I did that a few times on Christmas Eve. Okay. Is like, especially when it came to using some of like the Midnight Fenrir units, is like I would move them into position, see what the attack was, and then see like, okay, what's my hit percentage? Yeah, 62%. That's not quite high enough for me. So then I would move them back, move another unit, and then, you know, kind of.
Well, it's what I mean is it's like an unlimited undo.
Oh,
because so I could like, then do the action and attack, but then undo and go back. So it's interesting how the game is structured. It's almost like freeform, do whatever you want, but how can you optimize your experience to get the challenge done?
Interesting.
So it does make you spend more time.
But I kind of wish that there was like an RNG punishment for that. Like, did you ever watch that movie About Time with Domhnall Gleeson and Rachel McAdams?
If it's about time, I've had to see it.
If it's about time. So it's got Bill Nighy in it. Domhnall Gleeson is this character. It's like a romantic comedy, but all of the men in his family have the ability to travel back in time. And so he uses this ability to like manipulate things like, oh, you know, I screwed up with my first line talking to the girl, so I'm going to go back in time and redo it. And then like, you know, all this stuff. Well, there comes a point in the movie where it's after he has a 2-year-old daughter and he's like trying to fix something that happened. And he goes back in time. And when he comes back, he fixed what he did. But then he has a son instead of a daughter. And he asks his dad about it, like, what happened? And he's like, oh, yeah, that's the thing about your time traveling ability is like, you know, your kids are like moments in time. And so like, if you go back before they're born, different kid gets born. And it's like, oh man, like that's a heavy choice to live with.
That's very interesting. The idea of it's a completely different person.
Yeah. So then, and the only reason I bring up something so heavy is because then imagine that as a game mechanic where it's like, yes, you can undo your actions, but things might not play out the same way that you expected them to.
I like that. So if I was to apply that to this Godzilla game, it's like I can do the unlimited undoes, but then when I go forward, it could be that a different kaiju shows up, a different attack is used. Yeah, I like where you're going with that. But speaking about time travel movies, did you see that Nicolas Cage movie Next?
No, I've heard of that one, but I never saw it.
Not gonna say anything about it. You need to watch it. I think your wife would like it too. It's a great movie. If that's the one I'm thinking, I want to say he did a couple sort of time travel movies, or maybe. I don't know. Nicolas Cage does everything. And
I mean, yeah, he's Superman.
Yeah. Superman. He was going to be Superman. That's right. He could still be. And he was actually in the Flash movie.
Yeah. Again, time travel.
Yeah.
Sometimes things get mixed up and you end up with Nicolas Cage Superman.
Which is pretty interesting because I guess since we last did a show, they came out with that Superman movie trailer. And, you know, we're movie buffs, especially like I love, you know, just thinking about the Gundam movie, like the idea that's influenced me to make this channel. Like when it comes to filmmaking, I'm not a huge Superman fan. And also I think James Gunn is a great filmmaker, but I'm not necessarily into his movies. That said, I do think this would be good. Like it would be what the mainstream would want. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it definitely feels like a Marvelized DC movie, right?
Yeah, and I think maybe in what he's talked about in interviews and the approach is, because I've been looking at this, is to not go too far with that, where then the comedy is just that, and it's like, what are we, you know, even doing? But he's good at that stuff with heart, like Guardians of the Galaxy 3. Like,
yeah.
It's funny, those Guardians of the Galaxy movies, I do not care for the characters. I do not care for the story, but it is fun how he directs the ensemble.
Yeah.
You know, and to me, that's what, like the Suicide Squad movie he made, I didn't care for it at all, but it was fun watching the ensemble. Like that's what he's good at.
Yeah. And that can be tough. I mean, like, you know, juggling that many sort of personalities and then also like their story arcs and things like that. You've got a lot of people in your ear telling you, you know, well, that's not how I think this character should behave. And it's like, well, you know, I'm the director. So,
yeah, And that's funny because, you know, I saw Kraven the Hunter and I forgot if I've talked about it, where it's like, it's not a bad movie. In fact, if this was like the first of the Sonyverse Spider-Man movies, the Sony villains, I think people would be more, you know, warmed to it. But I think because of after like Madame Web and Morbius, which both of those I stopped halfway through, I think by falling asleep.
You didn't even make it to Morbin time?
No. Yeah, I barely remember that movie. I like the actress in that one though. But anyway, but once they got to Kraven, it's kind of like, well, you know, this really isn't doing anything interesting. You know, Venom was kind of Marvelizing the whole thing, but
yeah.
I think
Venom probably would have flopped if not for having Tom Hardy attached to it.
Exactly. And he had creative input.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. So that kind of going back to that, and this is what I'm hoping out of the Gundam live action movie is this Kraven the Hunter movie, they got a director who made films that he would write and direct his movies. And they all did very well, and they're all well made. You know, even if you didn't like a movie or not, you can sometimes notice, okay, that's well produced or whatever. This was the first movie that he directed that he didn't write. And so I think that says something. When a studio is hiring an auteur director that is used to writing directing, you need them to do the writing directing.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's where sometimes it felt like that. So I said this movie is well made, but there was nothing about it, no charm. And it's because the writer or the director wasn't able to put in what his fingerprint is to direct.
Yeah.
You know, it was like, okay, this is the story. Okay. And it's funny because Russell Crowe is great in it. Like, and Aaron Taylor Johnson as the good guy. Like, that was interesting. It's just everything around it you didn't care about. Like,
yeah, I mean, some of those characters, like, you know, Venom has a little bit more gravitas to him, but like, you know, Morbius and Kraven, they're cool villains, but like without Spider-Man, there's not a whole lot there. I mean, it's like, imagine if they made a Captain Cold movie, like just Captain Cold from the Flash Rogues Gallery, like no one cares.
Well, see, it's also a good point because like with the Morbius movie, I think if they leaned into a vampire horror film, maybe that's what would have helped it. I mean, that helped like the early Captain America movies, right? I mean, something like Winter Soldier, because they decided to lean into that type of genre.
Yeah. And same thing with like Blade and the Punisher, right? Like those were much more like grounded and small stakes, like very contained story.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. So I hope, and you know, it's been interesting because while I've been doing my Godzilla watch, you know, of the, right now, I'm really, and I do this thing where I rewatch movies a lot when I like them, you know, and it's funny because I rewatch movies that I know maybe people don't like this or people don't care about this, but I like what it's like. Oh, the artist was trying this. I get it. Good job. And so one thing I've noticed with like watching these Godzilla movies is I'm then lately to get, you know, the family interested in watching some, they like the modern American, or not that they're not modern, but you know, the American MonsterVerse Legendary.
Yeah.
But there, it almost does the Marvel thing, but actually less offensively, because it's doing over the top fantastical action, you know, where Marvel does that too. But then every second there has to be a quip that someone wouldn't say. Whereas in these Godzilla movies, they minimize that or they relegate it to a character.
And, yeah, and I mean, I think that in Japanese culture, maybe how do I say this politically correct?
Yeah.
Like, they're not a humorless people, but they definitely like everyone's not a comedian in Japan. Let me put it that way.
Yeah, and so it's interesting then watching the two films the two style of filmmaking, because what happens with the American ones, they make them so serious that sometimes the fantastical comes off as cringe in a way, you know, almost reminding me of like when I was in middle school in theater class and I had this idea for this zombie movie, you know, but it's like
so cool.
Yeah. But I'm acting so serious about it, but I'm forgetting the charm. Whereas these Japanese Godzilla movies, it's almost like they go charm first. Okay. What makes this? And it's like, well, since we're using suitmation, you know, the and the model, we have to film it this way, or now we have to fill in, how do we do interesting character stuff? So to go back to time travel, it's very interesting how this one, 90, I forget, it was the 91 Godzilla movie where they had people, alien or humans come from the future to help them, but then go back in time to kill the original Godzilla dinosaur before it morphed. And then they messed up present. So I think it was something like King Ghidorah was alive or Godzilla. I forget. And then they had to go to the future to then make a mecha King Ghidorah. So that's all goofy nonsense, but they're never trying to explain the science beyond like, oh, why we have to do this. And but then what happens is you get this fantastical action. They're not trying to be serious, so it's not cringe, if that makes sense. Like, yeah. I feel like, yeah, when I'm watching these modern American, like, disaster movies do this too, where it's taken so seriously that it comes off cringy because, like, well, okay, that's not, no one's gonna, and I think that's Marvel tried to fix that by adding the humor, but I think that's not what you have to do. I think you just have to be aware of a character's reaction throughout, and it doesn't have to be comedy. It could be a story-based, plot-based reaction.
Yeah, you know, well, I'm glad you're bringing this up because, like, yeah, I think that taking yourself too seriously comes off as cringe, and then, like, taking yourself not seriously at all, that's how you end up with, like, Deadpool, where it's like, okay, yeah, well, then nothing matters. Like, it,
you know, yeah, exactly.
Like anything. And so, you know, we talked about that movie Carry On, and there's a lot of moments in Carry On that I think, you know, you end up having to suspend disbelief because you're like, wait a second. You have this like group of terrorists that is capable of developing like a bomb that they're going to smuggle onto a plane, but their entire plan hinges on one TSA agent being their patsy. Like, they can't just smuggle the bomb on any other way. And it makes me think of like movies from the 90s and stuff. Is like, I started thinking about, because, you know, it was Christmas. We were watching Home Alone and Christmas Vacation and stuff like that. Home Alone is one of those movies that if you pay attention, they answer all of the potential objections from the audience. Is like, you know, oh, wait a second. Like, how would the flight attendant have let Kevin on the plane go to New York if he had the wrong boarding pass? Like, that's so dumb. It's like, no, it's because he ran into the lady and they dropped all the boarding pass.
Oh no, she just let him go or something. Because
right, so they were like, okay, put him on the plane, like we'll sort it out afterwards because we can't hold up traffic. And so it's like, even with just like a 3-second scene, you can address the objections of the audience without having to go, you don't have to do full Christopher Nolan and say like, well, the rules to going to Inception is that there are three levels of dreams. And when you go past the third level, you get to limbo, and limbo is actually 10 years. It's like, you don't have to do all of that. Just have like one little 3-second scene that says like, I don't know what happens after three. Like,
that's interesting because in Inception, there's times where the rules aren't broken or the rules aren't gamed. Like, there's opportunities where the characters could have done more and they didn't. But it's interesting you brought up Home Alone because that's Chris Columbus, the director, which I think did the original Gremlins, if I'm not mistaken.
I'm pretty sure he did,
or he wrote it or something. Because what was interesting about the original Gremlins was it established rules that you could then question.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, eating after midnight, what, you know, the time zone thing. So then in Gremlins 2, they joke about that. And I think that's a very interesting, it's almost like when you're writing these stories that you're filming, you kind of have to be aware of the audience watching it. So I think that's the difference with kind of these modern American films. Like, they've kind of lost that. And it could just be where they realize, oh, the audience doesn't care. But then maybe yes, to a point, depending on the genre or type of film. But then it gets to a point where people are nitpicking at the movie because they really aren't explaining. And I wonder if there's a word for that. Is there a word for movies that, and I know I say verisimilitude a lot, and that could be what it is, but it's where things are, events occur. And this was big in The Acolyte for me. Events occur that, like, okay, there's 10 more possibilities that would have rather worked or they could have done instead of this. Why wouldn't they? It's like, then you're thinking that instead of enjoying it.
Exactly. And it goes back to that advice that the writers of South Park, Trey Parker and Matt Stone, it's like, if the beats of your story don't go, this happened and therefore this happened, or this happened but this happened, then you're lost. Because if you say this happened and then this happens, then you don't have a story. That's you have right. a sequence of events. And it's like, you always have to have a connecting thread that holds them together. And you can just barely stretch that thread sometimes. It's like, wait a second, is that really how they would have reacted to this? And then it's like, oh, but you can snap it back if you have something else happen to kind of bring it back.
That's interesting, because so in the 2000s Godzillas, the Millennium ones, two of them are sequels or in the same continuity. It's interesting. Yeah, some of them are.
It's like,
yeah, some of them aren't. And what's interesting about this continuity is the first one has Mechagodzilla in it, and they get a scientist that knows how to splice DNA or whatever, and they're using Godzilla's DNA from his bones as part of the computer and the Mechagodzilla. So the second movie, that's the direct sequel, is, oh, because of that, Mothra is coming to destroy the humans if they don't put Mechagodzilla. It's not supposed, that's unnatural.
Yeah.
So it's that but thing. But a sequel, which is a great idea to think, a sequel can be a but. That's a weird sentence, but I think.
I mean, it makes sense. It's like, yeah. That's the way that storytelling should happen, is that like actions have consequences.
The original Mobile Suit Gundam. We stopped the Principality of Zeon, but the remnants formed, and then a division within the Federation got big-headed with all the money and weaponry, and the Titans formed. Yeah, if you can connect a butt, and I like butts, so that kind of worked. No, but
if you big ones.
But no, that's something cool to think about, because when I'm writing my own little stories in my head, I'm always thinking, what are some things that you've taught me that I've learned to pick up from? And that's one thing to think about.
Yeah, and I mean, dude, you are so much more well-versed on this kind of stuff, because I am trying to think for the life of me of like a, you know, not a marquee director that could work with an ensemble cast like what you would get with Gundam, right? Like, because you're going to need someone that can handle having a Bright, an Amuro, a Char, a Sayla, Kai, Hayato. Like, you have this ensemble cast. Every single one of these characters needs a little bit of screen time.
Yeah.
You know. And well, you're not going to get James Gunn, because
I wouldn't like his sort of.
No, I wouldn't like his take on it either. But
even though he has done darker movies, but it's usually more focused, you know. But I think Steven Spielberg comes to mind, which I don't even think that's the best idea. But I just think like Saving Private Ryan, how well that did, how I cared about all those characters, yeah. You know, like, and that is kind of a war thing, because these people are caught up against life or death at every moment. And that's what's big about the original Gundam, is the characters are faced with life and death situations at every moment. And there's different personalities, Kai's personality versus Sayla's personality, you know? And so again, Jim Mickel, which I'm finally memorizing his name, you know, after seeing what he's done, I feel like that would work. So, I mean, really still waiting. I'm hoping once January starts, we're going to have some news.
Yeah, I mean, there's got to be some big developments for 2025, right?
Right, and my thought is the first bit of news is going to be confirming that it is, because I don't think they've necessarily confirmed, unless they kind of have, that it's just just the retelling of the original Mobile Suit Gundam. I mean, they kind of hinted at it the way they spoke about it, but to get confirmation of that, and the title, is it going to be called Mobile Suit Gundam? Is it going to be called Gundam? Or are they going to call it G Suit? And Gundam's not even going to be spoken at all in the whole thing.
Well, I think, I don't remember if we talked about this on the show or not, or if it was just something I mentioned on Discord, but like, given how many times Bandai has had their marketing blown up by people tracking what has been trademarked, Silver Phantom. Ooh, what's that? Requiem for Vengeance. Yeah. Ooh, what's that? Generation Eternal. Oh, well, we know what that is. But like, that's the whole reason that they called G-Quacks or G-Cucks, is like,
yeah,
because you can't trademark that. Like, you're not going to find it in the trademark registry. So it's like, if we don't see something that's trademarked by Bandai or Sunrise, then like,
it's probably Mobile Suit Gundam.
Probably just going to be Mobile Suit Gundam,
which would be great. Yeah. I, only because that would inevitably get us hopefully to the Zeta movie. which would be sick. Like to see a live action Wave Rider, I think is what I'm most excited about.
I mean, ideally, I would like to see these things done as trilogies, like a Star Wars or like Lord of the Rings. Hopefully we could get someone like a, you know, like Peter Jackson was incredibly bold in his youth to say, like, of course I can do all three Lord of the Rings books in one movie. No problem. Let me go to New Zealand. I'm going to get some of my guys together. And it was like, oh, shoot, I only did a little bit of all three. I guess you have to let me do all three movies. Like,
oh, yeah. And that was New Line at the time, right? Yeah. That he was. Yeah. And that's, you know, talking about Lord of the Rings, even though I've never really watched through all of them, I maybe one day, I don't know what it is. The things that I've loved that I've seen on the internet are when it's the battles, because to be honest, and you know, I think it's hard for this to be animated. We see hints of it with the Battle of Balaku or something, but I do want to see lines, rows of grunt, Xeon Federation just coming at each other. And then like the camera slowly moving as some are, you know, are melee stuff or some are shooting, like I keep forgetting what's called Legend of Galactic Heroes, whatever that anime is, when they did the remake, the way they showed all of the ships and fleet battles going on. It was like, this is sick. And it's like,
cause that's what it's supposed to look like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so that goes back to the Saving Private Ryan. And that's where like the shaky cam on the beach, that's where that came from, because how can we make this look like it's really happening? And that's, at the end of the day, it's what I want them to pull off with, the gun. Now I wonder, I've got an idea here. In like the Mandalorian series, they even for fun, I guess, created models of the ships, and they would do the old school, you know, like the camera moving to the model and then green screening that. Do you think that could be done with a mobile suit? Like they create a model. I almost feel like that needs to be an Easter egg, where at least some scenes there's a model kit that they have weathered just right, and they're doing some of that sort of physical.
I mean, I think that they would have to. Like, maybe, you know, I guess it depends on whether the mobile suit's in motion or whatnot. But like, you know, even in like old Star Wars and like, you know, the movies, it was like they would have the model and then green screen the actors in front of it. Like they weren't standing in front of the Millennium Falcon. It was, you know, a model this big.
Yeah.
It's like, for the scenes where it's like Amuro talking to Bright or something, green screen the actors and then have the model of the mobile suit like green screened in behind them, like
whole miniatures. It would be cool if they were to combine that. I just, there's something, and again, watching these 90s and 2000s Godzilla movies recently, it's like that's the part I love so much. Whenever I'm starting to see the miniatures or the smoke effects, it's like, man, how are they pulling this off? Wow, that looks great.
And they did that for Lord of the Rings, like the whole city of Minas Tirith. Like that was,
I read about that
model, and they like superimposed it onto the landscape. And it's like, oh, hey, we're looking over this hill at this city in the distance.
It's interesting. Wasn't it episode one was mainly miniatures, when people were like, oh, the special effects are horrible. It's like, well, actually, most of the time. Yeah. So I don't think that stuff has really gone away as much as we think. And I think a lot of times you get like the, you know, those studio big budget movies like A Kraven or whatever, where they're just kind of just using CGI wherever instead of. I will say, you know, to end with this movie thing real quick with Kraven, showing off his superpowers was well done. Like I always look at what is the gimmick that this movie could have. Okay. Yeah. His superpowers are kind of unique, you know, it's still super soldier, but I think they did like, they pulled off a super soldier running, looking like it, not like the legs are moving, but they're fat, you know, it's faster than the leg. Like they were really able to make him look like he was taking these giant fast
rides,
like even when he would get hit by something or run into something, it was done very well to make it look like, and I would like to see that expanded, you know, on in the future. But all right, yeah, moving on from that, here's a question. I know we're both dads, and so times have changed. Did you get anything cool for Christmas?
I got a few things cool. I mean, my wife every year gives me a pair of socks with my daughter's face on them. So this year was funny because it was, you know, her Halloween costume. So she had like little cat ears on and stuff. But this is the last pair of socks that I get where it's only one kid on them, because next year I'm going to have two. So
yeah, the leveling up the gifts. Yeah.
That's but cool. Then I did get this pretty sweet thing from a buddy of mine.
Oh. Yes. So
this was actually from you. This is my new Gundam build mat, which I hope can you guys still hear me when I'm talking through the neoprene? This thing barely. Is awesome.
Yeah. So guys, this thing is, it's technically for sale yet. I just haven't promoted it yet because my sample was messed up. His sample is working fine. And the idea is, it's a mat for building, but not for cutting or painting. I mean, yeah, you can if you want, but the purpose is just when you're at your desk and maybe you're multitasking and then you want to like.
And it's got designated areas for each of the parts as you're building them.
The part that I needed the most was the right and left for building like arms and legs. So I can cut the parts, pre-put them in their areas, and then not be like, okay, where was that part? I knew it was here somewhere. And that's why I made it the color it was, where it's not white, but it's not dark.
So that you don't lose the parts on there. I appreciate that.
So it's for sale right now. I will later be doing a video, but it's just, the sample they sent me was messed up, but yours turned out fine. So
yeah, mine was great. So between that and then shout out to Ultronimus in the chat for hooking me up with this. Hyrule Historia, which I had been eyeing for a very long time. So thank you, sir. I have a lot of Zelda research to do now.
Wow, that is cool. I love that stuff. Zelda lore or Zelda information. Is there new stuff from Tears of the Kingdom? Was that lore heavy?
This book. I think that this book goes up through Breath of the Wild, but not Tears of the Kingdom.
But does Tears of the Kingdom offer new lore?
It does, actually. In a lot of ways, it kind of goes back and debunks a lot of the stuff from Breath of the Wild, because there was a lot of speculation about what the Zonai were. Like, were they this barbarian tribe? And so they kind of retconned that for Tears of the Kingdom, obviously, because the Zonai became this, like, ancient civilization that was like the dawn of Hyrule. So
I like that story. That's why I need to really play through Tears of the Kingdom. I just, you know, the building, everything, the
time travel, like,
oh, there you go. Yeah, the time travel stuff. Oh yeah.
Yeah, okay. What about you? What Christmas
some cool stuff actually get? So first of all, my wife gave it to me early. It was a Godzilla shirt of him in a Santa outfit. Because she was like, I'm going to give this to you now so you can wear it on Christmas Eve, Christmas Day. So that was cool. But then also, and hey, here's the thing. Yeah, everyone knows I have a Gundam channel, whatever. But it's like, what to get Adam Gundam-wise, because he has everything. You know, like, as I'm always getting the thing. She got me this little Funko Pop of Godzilla, which is interesting because it's the first time I feel like a Funko Pop actually looks good.
You know, it works for Godzilla, especially because he stands upright like that. Like, I like the upright Godzilla as opposed to like the more hunching over dinosaur ones. That
right, and the eyes too, like the big black eyes. It just works with this sort of design rather than like a human. That's why I don't really. I have that jumbo RX-78-2 Funko Pop, which that's pretty cool. But even the big circular black eyes, it's like, that doesn't really make sense to me.
Yeah, you know? Everything looks like Coraline.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. But and then my brother gave me a shirt and I posted it in the Discord. It was like that skull RX-78-2 head, and it had like Gundam and like black metal.
So metal.
Yeah, it was really cool. And that's really about it. Oh, I think my mom got me some Penguin shorts. You know, shorts with penguins on them for, you know, pajama shorts. So,
no, of course.
Now, I did get myself something. It was a pre-order, though. But this is that Zeta GM2 that I love the look at this. Just like the grunt suit, you know, like the mass production, you know, their frontline type of unit. Like, I love this stuff. And I haven't done a review of it yet, and I will, but this is actually featured in my top five robot spirits of 2024, even though I just got it. But It's just because it's everything I want in a Gundam action figure, because it's the GM. It's the GM from Zeta.
And it's like the pinnacle GM. You and I have talked about this before, how like the Gundam Mark II is the, it's like the leveled up Gundam. Like it's the perfect version of the Gundam. The GM2 from Zeta is like the less goofy, like we're going to be serious about designing mobile suits version of the GM. Yeah.
Because the antenna is what also helps. And even, you know, how they make the helmet head part a little more realistic, even though, again, it has the primary colors. But, you know, and what's really cool is it's hard to see on here, but I'll talk about it in the review. Like all the tubing in the back has all this texture on it. And it's just, and something that's really cool, especially just thinking of design wise, this being in space more, is the what I'm assuming are extra thrusters that are around the legs. Sweet.
Yeah, just for like added maneuverability.
Yeah, because I would want to see that. Like seeing just a blank leg, it's like, well, there's more that that could be used for mechanically, like in space, how it would function. Because, you might have the thrusters on the bottom of the feet, but you would think you would want them in other places. So,
and it's got a beam rifle, like instead of the little beam spray gun.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Exactly. You know, I always go, it's like Men in Black, you know, the whole noisy cricket thing. Like,
yeah, I know. So like, this is great. I can't wait to do the full review for it. But that the video is up, though, if anyone's interested, the top five robot spirits of 2024. I had so much fun. I love doing videos like that because I have like the camera in two places. And it's like I like that I can talk about the figure. I can't wait to do it. I think I'm going to do it for Gunpla because there are some cool Gunpla that I'm proud. It's more of like I'm proud of how I customized it. So I'd be like, oh, here's my favorite ones from 2024. But
nice.
I wonder, you know what? I feel like with Gunpla, when you could say top Gunpla of 2024, I feel like it's valid to have maybe a top that you built in 2024 that might not have came out in 2024. Because how many people really do build the kits that come out right then? You know, a lot of times you're seeing people that are already working on something. Something else comes out and that's part of their backlog. I know I've done that.
Well, and I mean, if you look at any of the top builders, like, you know, the people that win Gunpla Builders World Cups, it's like they're building vintage kits. They're building stuff from their backlog. Nobody is building something from that year ever. The people, I feel like the only people that build the stuff that's coming out this year are like Ray Content Studio creator. And Mechagai Kotsu.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, it's like the content creators or people that are more maybe newer to the hobby, you know, and they're just getting the one building. Because I feel like, and it happened to me, when you first get into the hobby, you're just building them all the time. And then it gets to that point where you realize, oh, I can't build this one yet. I'm still finishing this. But then you happen to get another one, and then you're like, well, I might as well get a whole bunch. And then you have a backlog. And then it's you got to choose. Small,
and then...
Yeah, yeah. You know, So another one, and so I did a live stream of this. So this is that Mobile Suit Ensemble Strike Freedom, Mighty Strike, whatever. I actually went through and painted and detailed it. So even like it might be hard to see on here, like the gray on the shoulders, there's gray on the, actually a lot of gray on the chest unit itself.
Nice.
I went through and painted, and it was so much fun. Just the hand paint, like, so not only is the live stream available if you wanted to see in detail how I did everything, but like even the guns, these things were completely white, and I went through and added you know, the red, the blue. That was so fun. I am gonna have a full review of this Mobile Suit Ensemble one, just to kind of show all of its little gimmicks, because it came with option parts set, because it's the Freedom. But then it has the thing for the Mighty Strike Freedom, which I keep forgetting the name of that. I know someone will probably throw it in chat. But in that video, I will kind of detail, like, this is what you should do. Oh, yeah. The other thing, too, is the beam sabers come clear. So I happen to have a Gundam marker that was neon pink.
Oh, sweet.
So that kind of worked out because it has a great color to it. And now it's not, like, see-through or clear. But I mean,
like reflective, like,
yeah, it still works really good. I was really proud of that. And speaking of clear, I finished this and I will be doing a full review of it, but I'm actually waiting to get this third party Oh, I forget what it's called. The light, Wings of Light, or something like that. So there's this third party Wings of Light kit I want to get for this, and then I'll do a review. But I will say and one thing is
X parts, right? Like that's not an LED kit.
No, but that is a great idea because it was cheap. It's like $10 where it's just the wing, but the LED thing, you sent me some stuff. So I might have to see how I can utilize that.
There you go.
but one interesting thing about a clear kit, and I don't know if anyone else has built Proud Defender. Thank you guys. That's the name of the add-on. But the one interesting thing about these clear kits is I put on all the decals. It was tons. But most of the time, you can't even really see the decals. And so it's like, I don't know. I need to revisit the idea because, again, I only built this because I saw it in person and thought it looked great. But I don't remember if I saw the decals or not. And I don't know if it's worth putting the decals on or not. So I might have to revisit that. I'll talk about it in the review, kind of like live and or in real time as I'm looking at it. And I would like to get other people's thoughts on that too, because, you know, after building that clear kit, I kind of like that, but it depends what it is, you know?
I think like if there are white parts of the kit, maybe they shouldn't be just clear. Maybe there should be some like just a little tint of color to them, like whether it's a gray or something, you know what I mean? Like,
or they should have a different decal sheet that maybe is reflective stickers instead of just the standard ones. And because better. I think that's the issue. It's because even the instruction manual for it was of the original
manual. Release. Yeah.
So I do think it would need reflective stickers or something, but still that was a lot of fun to build. I really enjoyed that. But anyway, I guess I was just bringing up stuff I got for myself. What else did I get myself? That's the problem. I'm usually getting myself things.
But see, and you brought up a very good point, which is like, you know, being a Gundam content creator, like your wife knew not to get you anything Gundam related. She got you Godzilla things because she knows that that's the kick you're on.
Yeah.
Ultronimus knew not to get me more Gunpla, but instead to get me something Zelda related because
that's something a good idea
that I'm also interested in that I'd, talk nonstop about. So I think that, for the Gundam creator in your lives, don't get them any more Gundam.
Yeah, exactly. That's actually pretty good. I want to talk about something else with Christmas, and that is sometimes the blues that set in, you know, and I does that happen to you at all?
Oh yeah. I mean, especially after any like major holiday where there's lots of people gathered and we all are like having a good time and stuff like that. It's like, as soon as the party's over, as soon as everybody leaves, I'm like, I get this like, I don't know if it's like a serotonin hangover or something like that, but like,
okay, that's a good way to put it. Cause I wonder I'll explain too. Like, and I even posted in the mental health section on the Discord just because I thought, okay, it might happen to me. Cause it happened to me last year, stronger than I thought. And it's what I'm thinking it's related to is, you know, when I was younger, I was very fortunate where Christmas was awesome every year. You know, my parents, they didn't spoil us, but you know, we got the things we wanted. And I remember having so much fun. And I remember where that whole week until school, at the end of the day, I'd put the toys I got back under the tree for the next day to then use or play with, or the video. It was like, I'm surrounding myself. It's like when I get into something like Godzilla, where I'm listening to the music, I'm watching the movies, I have the toys near me. It's like that with Christmas time. You know, I think Christmas is that sort of thing. That's so funny. And a little tangent, like, you know, when sometimes, you know, someone, wink, wink, my wife gets on you like, oh, when you get into something, you really get into it. And I'm like, but is that any different than Christmas? It's the same sort of thing. It's you're able to create this little pocket experience for yourself where you're indulging
yourself.
Yeah. Immersing yourself into the thing. And that's what brings the joy. So like, you know, earlier this year, and this helps me because I'm really into Gundam. So when I have these offshoot things, it kind of helps balance that. Like when the X-Men 97 came out, I was like, oh, back into that as a kid. All that music's awesome. They're coming out with new figures that are awesome. All that stuff. And then when I watched, Oh yes, that is a really good example. The music, the video games. I was trying to write a movie, like where all my ideas and expressions coming from. And then when I saw the Flash movie that had the Michael Keaton Batman, I'm just like, oh man, that was so cool. Oh, I remember Batman when I was younger. Music, Tim Burton. I made a costume for Halloween. Like I am immersed myself. And so I think Christmas is that too. The difference is, growing up, it was, you know, I had myself, I had a older half brother, but he wasn't always there on Christmas. But then I had my sister, my other brother, my other sister. The house would be full. And another interesting thing was my parents would have friends over a lot.
Yeah.
And or we would go to someone's house. So always around that time, like you were saying, surrounded by a bunch of people, I made it a week of playing with my toys under the tree. There was always something to do. And it's interesting, as I've gotten older, even to the point where my kids are a little older, where while they're excited about Christmas, it's not that big of a deal. It's not wake up super early, get to the tree, then just stay in until they decide to get up. And so and the other part too is I'm not going to be getting a bunch of presents, but not that I need to get a bunch of presents, because what would everyone get? You know what I mean? And so it's different when you're a kid. There's so many things you want and you can't just get them. So that's the way you get them. But when you're older, you don't need that. So then I feel like it's like you're saying there's that hangover, but how much of it is a withdrawal that for so many years, every year there's this week where, and I think it, you know, getting into spiritual stuff, it could be a lot of people. Maybe there's this sort of consciousness, this greater consciousness, because people are in this mindset and maybe you feel it. Like today, you know, my wife and I were like, well, let's go to the mall. And I really wanted to, because I wanted to be surrounded by people. And everyone's still in that Christmas spirit. The mall was playing Christmas music, or some of the stores are in. And so I'm feeling that. But then I'll sit at home when nothing's going on. And it's like, well,
what do I do now?
Yeah. And then I feel that feeling that's missing of when I'm feeling like I'm connected, when I'm feeling like I'm focused. And so I think that's what it is. And so it could be that it's a real thing and a fake thing at the same time. It might just be, well, it's a real feeling, but this is an opportunity to then create the newer experiences that then can be a new tradition. Like my brother came over and I was like, okay, we need to play a game. And it was this golf with friends. I don't know if you've ever played that.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Super fun game. And
that's so a great party game. Like,
yeah. Yeah, but back in the day, we would. I remember, you know what games? Okay, he was younger at a certain point, but once he got old enough, I remember. Yeah, even though I lived on my own, I would go to my parents' house and sleep over, bring my Xbox, and I remember we would just play Assassin's Creed. I'd just play next to him, but on my Xbox, and then he'd be on his, and we just play, and then the Call of Duties and all that. But I think you know, I'm really going off on tangents because I wonder how much gaming has kind of turned into it's either all in on multiplayer or you're a solo player.
That's the thing, is like, I think online multiplayer is a trap. I think it's a trap that breeds isolation and loneliness. And you know, obviously, like, I'll be honest, like, hey, like, I'm a Christian, and there's stuff from a spiritual standpoint that I can talk about, like, you know, sort of the emptiness, the empty feeling around Christmas, but I won't get into that so much as, like, yeah, couch co-op is a thing that I think is missing in modern, you know, family gatherings. Like you, you know, it was like I had my older brother, my younger brother, my older sister is kind of older than the three of us, so she never really like played with us. But like, you know, we had three, four, five cousins that we would all go see in Arkansas, and so we would all get together. We'd have the Xbox going. We'd play, you know, Halo 4-player, and it would be like, okay, when someone dies, they're knocked out, and someone else picks up the controller, kind of thing. So there was always something like that going on, But you don't get that playing Call of Duty or Fortnite.
Right.
You just don't. Yeah.
And I think that's kind of what's missing with games. And this is like another topic I wanted to talk to you about later. I'll kind of bring it up, but then we'll talk about it later. And it's the idea that nowadays games just aren't as great as they used to be because games right now are being developed based on what has existed. A lot of games that we grew up on and played are based on, we don't know what this medium is yet. Let's just make up mechanics. But now everything is based off of mechanics, so it's hard to get that fresh take, even for people that aren't gamers, but they're older, and they're like, well, you know, it's...
Dude, that's the same thing that I say about, like, mecha design, is like, what made mecha design in the early 80s so awesome is that this was, like, the first generation of, like, oh, what would a military use a humanoid robot for? And like, so that's where the designs came from. But from the 90s onward, you have mecha designers that studied other mecha. And so their designs all either end up as super derivative or completely out there where it's like, okay, I get it. Like, it's super hyper realistic with all of the panels and, like, you know, you've got all these exposed cables and stuff like that, but it's just, it lost all of the cool factor. It lost the soul.
Right. Of it being this is a mech, like designing it for, it's just like when we were talking about the movies, when you were showcasing something, special effects in the movie, it's making that experience be like, whoa, that. So,
and I think, limitations breed creativity.
Yeah.
When everything is possible, then nothing seems interesting. But when certain things are impossible, that's when you can get, like, really creative. And it goes back to what I was saying with, like, the couch co-op is, like, if you had more than four people, then how do you play a party game with more than four people? Like, you know, so you would come up with your own house rules and stuff like that. And that's where the fun came from. But if everyone can play, then it kind of...
You know what? That brings up a good point because there's that new Power Rangers Rita's Rewind that just came out, and that has 5-player multiplayer. What's interesting, though, is the game is made purposely to be hard.
Yeah.
So, like, someone like me might like that, but then if I'm trying to find a party game for just other people to play, then people would just be focusing on the mechanics and not, like, oh, just having a good time. And that's why I think that golf game works. I think something like, if you remember Power Stone on Dreamcast, like, and I know there's that new game Gigabash that kind of plays like that. Did you happen to play any games over the break, Christmas?
No. You know what I think I should have done was, what my wife and I had been playing, Keep Talking and Nobody Explodes or something like that.
It sounds familiar. Yeah.
Which is a great party game. Like, I think that would be a fun thing to do with family and friends is, like, you know, one group of people plays, like, the bomb squad, like, the, you know, the person actually defusing the bomb. And then the other one is, you know, you've got the people that have the instruction manual. And honestly, that would be a cool thing for you and I to do since we can't see each other's screen.
Yeah.
If we streamed that where it's like, you're the bomb disposer and I'm your on the radio
with me later and we can make it Gundam themed. That would
we need a Gundam mod for Keep Talking.
Yeah, that's pretty neat. I think next year I'm going to try to do the same thing and be really deliberate with having the games ready and different games to play, and then even inviting people that I normally, you know, wouldn't invite and just be like, hey, let's try to make a thing of it.
I mean, there's definitely pressure when, and no one tells you when it's going to happen, right? When it becomes your responsibility to then make the holidays special. Like, as a kid, your parents do it for you, but
yes,
there comes a day that they don't do it anymore and it becomes your responsibility. And you just never know when that day is going to come.
It's funny you say that because my mom used to make this certain breakfast only on Christmas. It was like this pastry that was really good.
Yeah.
And it's funny because my brother happened to make it for himself because he was thinking about it. And I was like, no, that's what I need to do too. And my mom would make cookies too every Christmas. So it's like, there's so many things that I could just not. Yeah. I can't depend on my parents now that I'm the parent and then I could do it. That's something I definitely need to do. And another thing I did was I went and saw The Nutcracker at the theater, the movie theater. They had the ballet on now.
Yeah.
My wife and youngest. It's weird how it worked out. We ended up taking two cars to go there. And they both wanted to leave. It's just, I guess I grew up, you know, watching that. So like, and then the music to me, it's like sitting down and listening to an album because I know all the songs and it's really cool. But that's another Christmas tradition I want to keep up is.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Definitely.
Okay. I'm going to move on to this last thing that I think is pretty interesting, but I want to get everyone else's take on it. And there's this article that came out on thegamer.com.
Yeah, I was reading that and I was like, what's Thegamer?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. So this is written by Ben Sledge, which is, that's a badass name.
Yeah.
It's called Why Is Everyone Obsessed with Gundam Now? And I'm like, okay, well, where's this guy coming from? So I'll read this. My online existence practically lives in two circles, football and Warhammer, and never the twain shall meet, except in Blood Bowl. But that's a different kind of football. I follow people who paint nice miniatures, hand sculpt the most messed up beasties you've ever seen. And people who post things like Salah should have buried that, 9 points clear, and football without Origi is nothing. And I don't know what that is, but that's kind of an example of that world.
So European football, because that's soccer.
Oh, is that what that is specifically? Oh, I'm glad.
Yeah, that's Mo Salah, and yeah.
Okay, I'm glad you were here to say that. But
you must be a Liverpool fan then.
Okay. But recently, one of those circles has expanded, or another circle has joined, or the circle has morphed into an oval or egg-shaped or something. Because everyone in my carefully curated Warhammer feed is talking about Gundam. What the mech is going on? Which I like that sentence. As far as I can tell, the surge in Gundam obsession has been spearheaded by Luis Sugden, the ex-Games Workshop staff member who left to create Rogue Hobbies, which I've heard of Rogue Hobbies. I'm just not familiar. An excellent YouTube channel with its own range of Goblin miniatures. Check out her channel, Buy a Goblin, Have a Happy Time. It's been interesting to watch ex-employees' growth after they've left the behemoth that is Warhammer, because so many of them branch out to try different systems. Chris Peachy Peach, who I interviewed earlier this year, enjoys Star Wars, Shatterpoint, historical games from companies like Warlord, and has found a brilliant niche in Silver Bayonet, a fantasy Napoleonic game system where he substitutes in Sean Bean for some fantastical sharp adventures. Okay. Sugden has a similar approach. While both clearly hold Warhammer and its miniature ranges dear to their hearts, she explores the weirder side of the workshop. However, she also isn't afraid to go further in her field for the cutest fantasy goblins, blah, blah, blah. Okay, I'm trying to get to the Gundam stuff. Okay, enter Gundam. Sugden, I've probably been saying it differently every time, has been singing the praises of Gundam for a few weeks now, and I think she alone has caused a spike in popularity for the models. She and select other influencers were invited to try the kits by Bandai, which seems to be engaging a focused marketing push in the UK at the moment. The marketing push is working. So Bandai UK recognized a situation where they can get in. And so, yeah, let me go.
I was going to say, was this guy living under a rock that, like, you know, I don't know, maybe in. This would be a question for Kyle because, like, you know, obviously Simply New Type, we have these kind of discussions all the time about, like, there's no such thing as being like a nerd anymore where you're involved in every nerd community. Like,
right. Yes,
Louise might be new to Gundam, but like, that doesn't mean everyone's new to Gundam. It would be like me saying, like, what's this Minecraft thing everyone's excited about now? And it's like,
and no, that's what,
yeah.
Yeah. No, that's what's interesting about reading this, because at one point it goes, what is Gundam? And it's like, well, I don't need to care. So it's really, this is written by a guy who's just now learning about Gundam through people that have the similar interests that are also now learning about Gundam. You know, that says a lot about the brand still, where, like, I believe, and I know you do too, where I think there could be a bigger push for the Western audiences to embrace Gundam. So,
yeah.
And I forgot how, it might've been Art Rovo or maybe someone else. I remember saying, like, oh, this is a big YouTuber that's now doing Gundam. And I'm like, well, now doing Gundam. Yeah. Like, you know what, but then I'm like, well, that's pretty cool. Like, what if there is this unique spark about Gundam that people discover that are already into that, you know, Venn diagram of hobbies, you know, you get the painting miniatures and then, you know, that aspect is here as well.
And credit to Bandai UK too, because what they saw was, it would have been easy to find a Gundam YouTuber in the UK and invest in them. But what they were trying to do is expand Gundam, right? So instead of doing that, they went to a Warhammer YouTuber that has a much bigger following and said, hey, can you try this Gundam out? Like,
yeah.
And, you know, sometimes those things work, sometimes they don't. But, like, that is going to be the method to get these things out there, is not to necessarily, you know, like the Adam and Steven are going to keep talking about Gundam without any help.
Yeah. No. And it's very interesting because I think that that kind of reminds me of the F1 thing. Like, yeah, sure, for people that like formula racing or whatever, the F1 racing, oh, there's Gundam, that's there. But what is that actually doing? What's the ROI on that? With reaching out to someone that was an ex-employee at Games Workshop and they're into Warhammer, it's like, well, here's an adjacent hobby where you can maybe expand. Because I'm guessing, and I don't know too much of her channel, I just heard about it before, maybe she's into painting. That's the aspect of the hobby I like too, when I'm doing the little details. So that's like, oh, I can expand. Oh, this is now mechs instead of, you know, whatever, in Warhammer. It's, I mean, there's some crossover with the mechanic stuff because there's a lot of that body horror going on. But yeah, I think, you know, I think it's a good thing because I do think Bandai could learn from Warhammer, especially the video games, you know, so maybe this is that step. But it's interesting, this is Bandai UK, mm-hmm, that decided to do that. So
yeah, interesting choice.
Yeah, no. And, you know, that's really about it for the show. But I'm going to, am I allowed to put links in the chat? Yeah. As the owner? Do I have to ask you permission? No, I'm joking. Okay. Yeah, I think it'd
go in there. Give me the
wrench. Maybe I'll try to add it in the description because I think it's a neat thought experiment, how get newer people into Gundam. This is maybe the start of something new. So
yeah. And what's interesting about it is this a way to gauge distribution, right? Because I think that a lot of our UK friends, you know, Pyro, for instance, talks about how difficult it is to get certain model kits over there. And so that's the other thing, is it's like, yeah, you could probably find somebody in South America that would happily promote Gundam to their South American following. But then it's like, well, how are they going to get the model kits, right? Like,
yeah, that's true. Like, if it makes it big enough where then they're noticing people are trying to buy, it's like somehow try to come up with a system where maybe it's a limited time. Here is a site where you can buy for your region. So shipping, you know, is subsidized through the cost of the kits, which, you know, can help. That's interesting stuff. But okay, then, that, you know, that's it for today's show. It's the last one of 2024. Steven, anything to add that I'm brought up?
I don't think so, man. Happy New Year.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, when we have our next shows, actually, is your show on New Year's?
Let's do a New Year's Eve stream. Like, man,
Well, is it New Year's Eve or New Year's Day, your show?
Oh, wait, would it be New Year's Day? Or should we do it New Year's Eve? Let us know.
Yeah, because I could do New Year's Day for sure.
Yeah, New Year's Eve.
Well, yeah, because it's not like we're going to do it at midnight. Or do we?
I think that would be cool.
That could be cool. My wife might be like, okay, where's the kiss? Okay, it's no, but no, that's fun. Okay, well, guys, all thanks for watching. Yeah, let us know what you guys think, because that would be actually pretty interesting. And then, yeah, I'm going to head out. So everyone have a good rest of the year. We'll talk later.